Yes, indeed. It is time for our weekly wine chat with Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Laura. How are you on this fine day?
I'm doing well. You know, the crowds are starting. It's still the 7 o'clock hour here at the fair, but I think it's going to be a busy one because we really do have rain coming the next 2 days. So I'm told people are going to try to fit their visit in today. So another busy one out here for sure.
Well, they're packing it all in, I guess. Get that last Pronto Pup of the season, I guess.
That is correct. I am told that you're going to talk to us about some Oregon wines today, and that is such a beautiful, beautiful region of the country. I know they have a big wine industry, so what can you tell us?
We're going to talk about all kinds of things, especially their Pinot Noirs are so terrific. And the reason being, I'm a little inspired by that, believe it or not. This weekend, I kind of avoided the fair, but I went out, and it's the beginning goose season, or the early Minnesota goose season. So I'm literally calling you from a duck blind right now.
Oh, I love that.
Overlooking the lake and all that kind of stuff. And it's an exercise in futility. I think it's still too early, but you kind of get out there and you do all that fun stuff. I mean, basically, I spent more time untangling decoys and trying to get the motor on the rowboat kind of going, and you're fighting all that stuff. But it's just sort of that time of the year where you kind of sit down and you're watching the sunrise for this morning. And it's just a glorious time, and, you know, you do soak it all in, and you realize that, you know, the seasons are changing. You see a little bit of the sumac is already kind of turning bright red, and there's a few of the trees that are a little bit sickly are turning their colors. So you're kind of changing everything and getting ready for the next season. So as we're sitting here, I wax nostalgic, and, you know, actually it's so nice I don't even bring my gun out. I'm just kind of looking at things. But you know, with that, when you do have a little bit of goose like that, or you do harvest some of that thing, you know, wild game is a very tricky thing to cook, because if you overcook it, it tastes like shoe leather.
Yes.
But the one thing about it, it's so rich and so intense in flavor, and you need some wines that kind of pair up with that and match that. So the Pinot Noirs from the Willamette Valley are some of the finest in the entire world. They're truly an amazing growing region. They have the unique ability where they have the Western Cascade Mountains that kind of shield them from the ocean. And then there's another set of mountains on the other side, which really keeps that valley nice and cool. Now, Pinot Noir is a very thin-skinned grape where it likes a cooler climate. It likes a little warm during the day, but then at night it loves those 40, 50-degree weathers. And, you know, if you look at the positioning of the Willamette Valley, it's just absolutely perfect to grow that, even to the point where several Burgundian houses, the Druens and also Lafleb, have purchased estates in the Willamette Valley. Those Burgundians realizing that, hey, this American culture, this American viticultural area is just a wonderful place to grow that. So they're even setting up shop, or the Druens set up shop, oh, God, now it's about 25, 30 years ago. But they're making great wines, and they realize how wonderful that area is. And again, you know, also when you're doing that, you know, is if you're, you know, maybe you're not shooting a goose, but if you're having some salmon, we had a little salmon last night, as a matter of fact, that a friend of mine always jokes, salmon is the other red meat, where it goes so well with Pinot Noir. I mean, it's just a match made in heaven, where you're sitting down enjoying that. One of my favorites that comes out of there, there's actually two. One is called Greetings, and that's a lovely Willamette. They actually even make, they have a contract of getting a Cabernet out of the Columbia Valley, which is about, 120, 130 miles north of the Willamette Valley. And their Cabernet is just a wonderful wine if you want something a little bit bigger and bolder. But those Greeting wines are just terrific. There's also another one that I kind of like. It's called Second Growth. Now, Second Growth has about three layers of wines. They just have their normal Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, and that's around $16 a bottle, and it's just approachable. It's nice. It's so easy and pleasant. They do have a Chelahem vineyard, and now that is just when you get a little bit more area-specific, you know, you get a little bit more intense wine, a little bit more flavoration to it. and they tend to, you know, maybe age that in oak a little bit. And that's a little bit pricier at about $30 a bottle, but it's just a wonderful wine. You know, rendle it with that kind of cherry flavor, even interwoven with a little bit of raspberry. But just a true, true fun wine. And then don't forget, they do make a couple of white wines as well, and that's Pinot Gris. Now, so many people think Pinot Gris, is that an entirely different grape varietal? No, it's the same as Pinot Grigio. It's a different terminology they use. And those wines, again, are very light, very approachable. They're easy drinking, a great way to start. And both outfits do make the Pinot Gris, both the Greetings and the second growth. Think of lovely, lovely Pinot Gris. That it's just an easy, approachable wine where if you're sitting out, starting out your barbecue or your grilling that salmon, or if you got lucky enough to shoot some goose and you're grilling it on your, taking care of it on the grill, you start it out with a little bit of that Pinot Gris where it's light, it's crisp, a little bit of fruit, but then the American Pinot Gris have a wee bit more acidity than the their Italian counterparts. So they kind of match well with salads and lighter fare. They're very, very delicious, and that's quite fun. And then also, you know, but that's what's so great about the Willamette Valley is just the Pinot Noirs that are coming from there. So rich, so wonderful, and so approachable. And, you know, it's kind of proud to say you're an American making those kind of great wines. And don't get me wrong, there are other regions that make wonderful Pinot Noirs down in the Russian River Valley around in California. But something about the Willamette Valley is just extra special that keeps the wonderful cool air and all that type of stuff. So if you're out going about or you're just tired of kind of running around the fair doing all that stuff, you can swing in any of the Haskells, pick up a little bit of that. Yeah. Truly enjoy it because they're rich, rich, fun wine.
Yeah. Hey, Ted, we have a question on the text line for you that is, it's not wine related, but this person is asking, can alcohols like vodka, tequila, and beer get old? It's been stored in a cupboard in the garage for about 15 years. What do we think about that?
Well, I'd probably say with the beer, you probably want to pour it out or boil your bratwurst with it. If it's been sitting around that long, it's not going to be too tasty. The trick on the alcohols and things like that, one thing, they can age. They're not going to get bad, but they're not going to get great either. There's a little bit of a misnomer where certain people, you know, grandpa passed away and they looked in their liquor cabinet and saw that he had a 12-year-old scotch from 1963, and they think, well, no, geez, now we have a 50-year-old scotch. No, that's not the deal. Once they take that out of the cask and put it in the bottle, the aging stops right there. It's still a 12-year-old scotch. What you will see is there's a little bit of Yulege or the angel share where some of those alcohols will evaporate just over time, and that's a natural occurrence with all that. If you'll see that, you know, maybe the bottle fill is a little bit lower, and that's just the alcohol evaporating. So, I mean, it's more of an adventure. You're not stumbling on some hidden treasure in there, but you can still, like, especially with the hard alcohols of vodka, tequila, you can still mix with it, but I'd say do it with an ounce of caution because, you know, just depending on how hot it got in that garage and then how cold, you know, that temperature variation could really influence it and affect it deleteriously.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Ted, I want to go back to something you said a couple of minutes ago about the Burgundians, the Frenchies, setting up shop in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And how common is that for producers and orchards from other parts of the world to come and grow in the United States?
Actually, right now, we're still kind of in the golden age, in my humble opinion, of the wine industry, where you're seeing the international exchange of ideas, the exchange of technologies all across the board. Oftentimes, when you do go into the different wineries, whether it is California up in Willamette or sometimes even in Burgundy or Bordeaux, you kind of walk in there and all of a sudden there's an Australian feller in the winemaking team. Or there's a kid from, you know, Minnesota who's on a study abroad and they're working in that vineyard. So it's very common where you see people not only set up shop, you know, the Rothschilds have set up shop down in Argentina with their Malbec production. There's all kinds of expansion where people jump all around. And it's even just the opposite as well. The Evanston family that's from Minnesota that owns Domaine Serene actually bought a vineyard in Burgundy, and they just kind of did the counter migration where they went to Burgundy to go do that. So you're seeing all kinds of, whether it's a proper investment or it's maybe a little a new toy project for people to go do. But it is terrific because you see a lot of different things when you do go into some of those wineries. You go into a California winery or whatever, and there's some French kid in there who's from Bordeaux who's there to learn about their stuff, and he's heard about it and wants to learn. So there's a great exchange of ideas, and especially technology as well, where you see our stainless steel fermentation tanks that we kind of invented are broad and are really helping out people making terrific wines.
All right. Let's chat about a little bit more about where folks can find these Pinot Noirs or the Pinot Gris that you've been talking about this morning, and where Haskell's is in the Twin Cities.
We shall. And right now, what we have going on in all the stores is what we call Satter Taste. We'll have some wines of the Le Forchetier. It's a French operation. They have a Pinot and a Chard and also a Sauvignon Blanc to taste. And there's a Haskell's all throughout the metro area where you can go in and taste those wines. There's a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with free parking on the weekend. There's a Haskell's out in Minnetonka right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. There's a Haskell's in St. Paul right in Highland Village on Ford Parkway. Haskell's down in Lomans Plaza in Bloomington. There's also a Haskell's out in White Bear Lake. If you're out going to the river, stop by Haskell's Stillwater. There's a Haskell's in Faribault right off of 35. If you're headed on up north, right off of Rockford Road, there's a Haskell's in Plymouth. Or stop by our super cellar up in Maple Grove, 20,000 square feet of all kinds of fun things to try and taste. Come on in and we'll take care of you. And if you can't stop by any of those, stop by Haskell's.com 24/7. You can place those orders or you can buy tickets for our up-and-coming beer cruise on the river. It's a lot of fun, all kinds of things to taste. Everything, all kinds of things to do. They'll get me out of the duck blind to go down to the cruise there, Laura.
Wonderful. You're having lots of fun. Thank you, Ted. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to that.
Likewise. ABC News is next.